Assalamu alaikum, hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Retail Remix Stories powered by Find. This is your place to get up close and personal with inspiring leaders who are not just building great businesses, but through their massively transformative purpose are shaping the future of commerce in the region. Our guest today, Domantas Grigaravičiūt. His name literally translated from Lithuanian means the Lord of Wisdom and Wealth. And I know, but I can vouch for the wisdom, and we'll find out about wealth because he heads one of the most innovative payment solutions in the world. In the region.
I actually didn't know that fact.
Oh, really?
No.
I so looked it up.
Now I'm going to use it. I only knew that it was named after like a old king or
like
something.
Like a noble, right? So yeah. I found both those and both actually fit you well. So if you were named after the king, works.
You got assassinated, so I don't want to go down that
not,
route.
Not that road. Yeah. But you can be as popular though.
Sounds good.
Great. Nice. Welcome to the show.
Thank
D.
you.
I'd probably call you D from here on.
All good.
Because that's how we all know each other in Dubai, right?
Yep.
With shorter names.
Yes.
But this story, this entire journey of Retail Remix Stories has been about inspiring leaders. And you're doing so much at ADN as general manager in the Middle East.
Yeah.
But for our listeners, it's always good for them to know who are they listening to.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the starting point always is once upon a time in Lithuania, there was a little boy called
Domantas. I don't know if we're going to go back that far, but right. I mean, we can. Yeah, I mean, by way of background, so yeah, I was born in Lithuania, but I grew up in the UK, right. In London. And yeah, I mean, in terms of keeping it relevant and talking a little bit about, you know, why I ended up at ADN, I started off in a private bank in the UK, very quickly realized that wasn't for me. Okay, I wasn't a private banker. I was right. working in a different part of it. But early on, I was like, okay, this is definitely not the place for me.
You're right, okay.
And then kind of transitioned into sales, much to the displeasure of my mum, who was like, you're crazy. Like, what are you doing? You got a nice job in the bank. You know, you stick with it. I was at that company for about 10 years through various roles, started off cold calling, moving into a country manager role here in Dubai.
Nice.
And then a couple of other things like experimenting with the business for a couple of years. Moved over into a crypto payment gateway for a short period of time. And then ultimately ended up at ADN last September. Yeah, so it's been about 10 months or so.
Amazing.
It's been a pretty cool ride.
Yeah, I've listened to you at a couple of events and I think you bring a lot of thought leadership into this role. But I think I still want to go back to your younger days, right?
Sure.
What shaped you to being who you are today, right? Because there's always some linkage to, you know, some key influences.
Yeah.
So like in my own example, my father was a very big influence on, you know, he was a military officer and growing up was nice. Very disciplined accordingly.
Yeah.
So maybe some of those personal instances.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if there's like one distinctive. I think obviously, you know, moving from a small country like Lithuania, we were like from the third largest city, I think, to a city like London, I think that was pretty eye-opening. So I think that was a good like shaping experience because you kind of go from a very small world to a very big one. Obviously, as a kid, you don't realize it, but I think that definitely had impact. And the other part is the challenges, right? You come, you don't speak the language, had to learn that. And then I think I don't want to speak generally, I speak for myself. It kind of created a bit of a push to kind of say, okay, well, you know, I felt like I was a little bit behind, you know, couldn't speak the language, needed to kind of catch up. And I think that's something that definitely has kind of stayed with me.
Right.
So it's a bit of a double-edged sword because it's the kind of like overly critical part. But at the same time, I think it's really helped to just kind of like push the boundaries a little bit.
Right.
Yeah, growing up, I think all possibilities were open to me. So it was never kind of like you have to do this or you have to do that. So I kind of explored, saw what I liked, saw what I didn't like and took it from there. But yeah, I think that move is the thing that kind of created like, okay, you know, I really want to make something because I felt like now I'm in this big pond
right.
competing with these people. And that's right. more my mindset than anyone kind of like putting it on me.
Right.
But I think that's ultimately what's kind of given me a lot of the drive that I have for the good and the bad.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then how did the transition to Dubai happen?
It happened super quickly. So during my time at the company I was with for 10 years, the role came up. And prior to that, I was always quite interested in like checking out other markets. So we were typically focused on the UK. It was very saturated. So for me, I thought, okay, let's check out other markets. So we did some work in weird and wonderful places. We went to Greece, we did Bulgaria. I spent some time in the Scandies, Benelux region. So always quite enjoyed moving around.
Right.
And then Dubai came on the table. There was a little bit of kind of like a, let's say a contest of who's going to win it or a decision to be made. And then my boss at the time called me. He was like, hey, listen, Dubai's on the table. You have to let me know in 24 hours.
Amazing.
So I called my then girlfriend, who's now my wife. And I said, hey, you want to go to Dubai? She said, yeah. And then 2 weeks later, we literally packed everything up and moved.
Amazing.
So it happened very quickly.
Yeah.
My wife hadn't actually even been to Dubai. She was just like, it's hot.
Okay.
At that time, it was like, no tax, so let's go.
All right.
What's to lose?
What's to lose, right?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Exactly.
Nice.
And it's been a really great move.
Right. Yeah. And you've always been in the investment space or from a...
Payments. Yeah. So it's been, I would say, like a little bit of a scale in payments. So started off in something that's quite traditional, which is like foreign exchange, kind of brokerage model. That business ultimately morphed into more of a fintech and kind of like had its own innovation. So it moved from that original format. Then kind of went to the other extreme, which is more around crypto and digital assets and stable coins, which was also a really great experience because I think we all know, I'm sure we'll touch on it, how much is going on there.
Yes.
And then now I feel like I've landed somewhere that's really the sweet point for me, you know, a company that innovates, that has innovated kind of throughout the time that it's been around.
Right.
But is also just an amazing fit in terms of culture, values, and kind of, you know, the things that I suppose after working for however many years, 12, 13, 14 years it is, I started to kind of shape what I like and don't like. And I see that there's a lot here that I like. And the stuff that you don't like, well, you know, that's kind of everywhere. So that's not the end of the world.
No, I think, and I take a cue from that because I was at Seamless recently where we were at your booth.
Yeah.
And my first observation was, how is everybody so happy in this booth? It was the booth that had most the most smiling people standing around.
Maybe it was one of the busy days.
But where it shows, right? When you say from a culture perspective, it's a great fit for people to work on. But I think going back to ADN and what's the charter in the region, right?
Yeah.
So everyone knows it as like the seamless, contactless payment solution. From a retail perspective, but for general listeners, would you want to kind of explain what exactly does Adyen do?
So Adyen is a financial platform that originally and kind of from concept and start has been focused around payments. That in the last couple of years has also changed, you know, going into other products. Adyen is also a bank. It also is heavily investing into embedded finance, so issuing platforms, which is kind of more to serve the SME market. But ultimately at its core, you know, we are the company that will process payments for pretty much most of the world's largest enterprises, both online and in person through terminals. But I guess the uniqueness is that the founders of the business, they had a business prior to that, that got sold. It got, I would say, absorbed into a very large organization and they spent some time there. And they kind of looked around and thought, I think there's probably more that we could do here because like this isn't the end goal. And that's when Adyen kind of came into action. Adyen itself translates into start again or to start again.
Oh, right. Okay.
And the uniqueness is that they thought, okay, let's build something that has zero dependencies or minimal dependencies on anyone else. And the reason that that's important is that I suppose when you work with, you know, brands that are just processing crazy volumes, have a huge amount of outlets and transactions, you know, everything is just at a huge scale.
Yes.
If something goes wrong, it's so crucial for those merchants to be able to know what's gone wrong, where, why, how, and getting it fixed.
Right.
Now, if you, as a traditional payments company, are working with all these various different partners, it becomes a little bit like that Spider-Man meme. I don't know if you've seen it. It's like, you know, pointing at each other.
Right.
Who's who? You know, and where's the problem?
Right.
And that's really what Adyen wanted to eliminate. That, and also to give merchants a lot of transparency, because this is a really complicated like world now, and right. it's getting more complicated. And I think a lot of merchants value that one platform and also the transparency that we offer them.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
and I think my favorite question always from a technology partner is, you know, everything's made for happy flows. So 99% things go well and you're always taking applause, but that 1%, how do you kind of make sure that, you know, you're always guarding out for those edge cases that are one day going to probably blow up in the face? And how do you kind of keep innovating in that space?
Yeah, so I think that's the whole idea of, you know, why the business wanted to build everything itself. So that...
So you have full control on...
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, those edge cases will of course happen. And I think merchants are also somewhat understanding for those things to happen, because, you know they work in a complicated space, but they want to resolve things very quickly. So that gives us, I would say, the advantage. So let's say, you know, when we in payments, typically whenever you are processing payments, you need to work with a bank that is an acquirer. Right. That bank determines the type of merchants you can and can't go for. That changes over time. So let's say you spent 5 years on a strategy on one particular vertical. The bank, for one reason or another, says, that's not a vertical we're that keen on anymore. Suddenly you've wasted a lot of time, and also maybe you're not able to serve that merchant base. So Adyen said, okay, well, that's a dependency. Why don't we just get our own bank? Of course, that comes much later in how long it's been around. It had the money and resources to do that. But that's how it thinks. You know, it's not kind of like, oh, but that's how it's always been done. Let's do it ourselves this way, because that will mean in those edge cases, in those 1%, we don't have to look to anyone and we can solve it very quickly ourselves.
Right. No, great point. And you've been in this across continents, right, really?
Yeah.
So, and how do you see the Middle East as different from, you know, European markets that you probably worked in?
Yeah. I mean, it's I don't want to use any like, you know, buzzword. It's dynamic. it's all of those things. It's kind of like it's a cross section really for me. Like, you know, Dubai is a hustler's market. Like, let's face it, that's how business has been done. You know, people, you can see deals, things happen, you push, etc. There's a lot of that mentality. There's a lot of that mentality for expats too, to be honest, because ultimately they come here because of opportunity. Right. So they're here to hustle too.
Right.
Then you have the other side, which is, you know, there's been huge innovation driven by the government, different initiatives. So then you have fast innovation and this real kind of hustle mentality. So it becomes an extremely exciting and frustrating market, to be very honest, because the two don't always marry.
Right.
Because one's a little bit more traditional.
Right.
I've done it this way and I'll always do it this way. And one's kind of like everything is changing.
It's changing, right.
So we find ourselves really trying to kind of marry the two.
Right.
Or sometimes we don't.
Right.
And therefore we have to say, okay, maybe now is not the time. The mindset's not there yet or whatever reason.
Yeah.
So I see it as as kind of like really at the junction of those two things at the moment. And I don't think that that's going to change in the near term, except for the fact that I think there'll probably be tons more innovation here because the leadership really just promotes and allows that to happen.
Right. Yeah. Right. And thinking on from here, so what does like 2030 or 2035 look like from a payment solutions vision point of view? Oh. And what do you think is going to happen? So what's the next big thing coming up?
Oh, yeah. I mean, ultimately, I think a lot of it will rotate around AI. I think we all kind of, you know, sense that and see that. How it will look, I mean, right now, again, buzzword alert, you know, agentic AI is kind of everywhere, but, you know, it's been there already. And if it gets better, like that is pretty much a game changer. That will definitely change how checkout experiences are built, what's optimized, how fraud works. You know, if there's effectively an agent who's doing these payments and knows you better than you know yourself, with recommendations, personalizations. So I think it's a very cool kind of future, but I don't think, I mean, anything I would say now would be really abstract and kind of a guess, but I think that's an interesting part.
Right.
What's also, I think, probably one of the biggest things that's been happening for a long time is around kind of the infrastructure with stablecoins. You see, obviously, you know, companies really looking into what they want to do there. There are different elements. One is, you know, let's use stablecoin for payments. I think that's a little bit further behind, but for internal treasury and being able to move money around your organization or within payments, for example, where you need to move cash flow around all the time.
Right.
That's a really interesting use case. And that could potentially rebuild like the whole kind of way that the financial system is set up. So those are kind of like, I would say, the two most prominent things that I think will continue to grow.
Right.
And then I think it's whatever comes in between.
In between.
Which no doubt there'll be a lot of. Yeah.
Yeah, right. And do you see this extending to becoming very specific things? Like, for example, buy now, pay later has been a buzzword, really, right? But do you see that kind of changing over the next 5 years or 10 years? Or do you think...
Within BNPL specifically?
Yes. Or maybe if it kind of aligns to other ways of, you know, manifestation with other forms, that BNPL gets extended into something else? Or would there be something?
Interesting. I mean... Let's face it, when BNPL came around, you know, people were like, oh, are people really going to use this? Because, like, you know, we have a credit card and so on. But it really took off because it's changed, I think, people's perceptions. Because, you know, they go, oh, this item is 5,000 dirhams. I can't buy that. But when you break it down into 1,300, you think, well, that's okay. And so it kind of, like, changed the whole way how we look at cost and the things we're buying. Maybe we're buying more expensive things and making it more affordable for ourselves. Extending that and doing that over longer periods. I mean, I think there'll be a lot of people that would like to do that. I don't necessarily think that would be the right thing to do because I think the majority of people are not amazing with their money. So do they need more tools to become less good with their money? Right. I don't know, personal opinion.
Yeah.
That part I'm not 100% sure, you know, like if it's something that will come or consumers will ask for.
Right. One interesting thing I learned recently from Jennifer Greco at one of the Retail Remix panels that she was on was about how seamless charities have become using ADN.
Yeah.
And that was a very interesting way to look at things, right? So from like you were saying, you know, ADN wants to do everything on their own.
Yeah.
And then how did this come about and what's the charter for that?
Yeah.
Because it's quite unique.
It is unique. And believe it or not, it's even more unique in the UAE because of the way it's set up. I'll explain it. The ADN's kind of has many kind of mantras and things that it likes to do. But one of the things is solving difficult problems. When it came to doing something sustainable or, you know, doing something that's for good, it's very easy for a large organization to just say, like, here's the check and off you go.
Right.
But, you know, ADN didn't feel like that was really kind of like helping to really build out what could be built out. And so we decided to create the giving product where basically merchants would be able to, you know, select a variety of different charities. Which would then customers would then be able to donate on terminals. So when you go pay with your credit card, your bill payment's done. It will say, "Would you like to give to charity?" Yes, 10 dirhams or 20 dirhams or whatever, and that payment is done. And the unique thing is that I guess that whole flow maybe isn't so unique, but what's the really cool thing is that those payments are split. So the merchant receives the money for the goods that they sold. And the charity will receive the 10, 20 dirhams that they donated. And that saves a lot of headache and reconciliation for merchants, which means that it makes it a lot more scalable. More merchants will then want to enable it. And if more merchants enable it, more people donate. And then the number becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. And before you know it, you have something that is kind of self-feeding, which we're then able to use for really nice causes.
Right.
So that's kind of, you know, how the idea came about. And UNHCR, for example, is one of our biggest partners globally, including in the UAE. That's kind of, you know, how we're looking to build out the product with a very strong partner, and then, you know, going into more local charities that we can work with as well, that certain merchants or certain industries really want to support.
Right. I think it'll be great to get your perspective on, you know, because Africa is now a growing market.
Yeah.
And in the money space, it's kind of skipping the entire revolution, right? So
yeah.
So what's your thoughts on what's going to happen in that space over the next maybe 5-6 years?
Yeah, so I think, as you say, it's kind of like skipping certain steps.
Yes.
So when I had some time with a company providing the crypto payment gateway, I came across a lot of use cases with stablecoins, which were so interesting for Africa. No, a very obvious reason: currencies are always being devalued, people can't hold on to their wealth, and dollars are not available. In comes, you know, a USDC right. or USDT, which then also provides yield. You now have a USD bank account that's giving you interest, and that's just, you know, amazing for people in Africa. And the more people have this type of payment method, the more merchants will then basically want to accept it. So then it creates this economy. So I think that in Africa, it's an amazing use case. And I think that's where it can really grow. I think from Adyen's perspective, Africa for sure is something that we are looking at. But at the same time, we have to be realistic with the resources that we have.
Right.
So we have a big focus on US. We have a big focus on India, Middle East, and Japan.
Right.
You know, those are not small markets.
Yes.
And Africa is also not one country,
yes,
right? So it's so many countries that each one has its own nuances. And when you start to break each one down, you think, okay, well, how big is the opportunity? For example, we did an exercise, you know, for South Africa, let's say, you know, I think the biggest market in Africa. It only equated to the size of opportunity that we have in Sweden.
All right, okay.
Then you compare, okay, do we want another Sweden or do we focus in US, Japan, right. India, okay. et cetera?
Right.
So for now, for us, Africa is not a core focus.
Right.
But I think there's a lot of very cool companies like Chipacash, Flutterwave that are really building out you know, how people are able to pay and access more liquid currencies there.
Yeah. Right, yeah. No, I think I'm towards the end of our...
What's your thoughts?
I think likewise, right? Because it's skipping... And from a retail perspective,
yeah,
we're seeing a lot coming up there. There's lots of opportunity. And if you, like you rightly said, if you go to specific countries, the opportunity is larger than the others. South yeah. Africa, of course, one, but Nigeria, yeah. Kenya are upcoming economies. The classic story of Nike, that no one wears shoes, so that's the market opportunity. Or do you really... Or they can actually run without shoes. So
yeah.
That's the other way to look at it, right? So kind of working towards that. We also have some inroads in South Africa now.
Mm-hmm.
But from an Africa perspective, I think that opportunity of helping brands not go through the pain process of building retail, then doing e-commerce, but build a complete unified commerce solution, I think that is really big.
Yeah,
the ticket size is what always sways people away from, you know, what can be done. And like smaller you explained,
sizes,
you know,
yeah.
payments, et cetera, especially from a cross-border technology services provider can be a challenge.
Yeah.
But there's a big partner network that's getting built. So if you're able to kind of ingest ourselves at the right time, then maybe you can yeah. probably be there early and then start. So that's the way we're looking at it.
Yeah. And the other thing is that it feels like the world has been like very much sleeping on Africa, yeah. You know, and what's happening. And I know that there is a lot happening now, but it's like, that took some time and people still find it very tricky to kind of, we want to go in? Do we want to explore? But the opportunity is massive. I think the middle class is like booming. You know, spending habits are changing.
Yes.
How comfortable they are with technology is changing. So it's a really exciting opportunity. I would love to you know, do something within that, but I'm just not sure I'd be able to convince my wife to move the family over somewhere. So yeah, that's it.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. It's probably also the fear of the unknown, right? Most people haven't been. Most people travel into Europe and other destinations, but not so much to Africa.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Rather than scary. Yeah.
Amazing. I'm towards the end of our conversation on Adyen, but I'd like to know more about you.
Yeah, sure.
And you did a startup yourself, right? And it was in the coffee space?
Yeah, yeah. So
how did that happen?
Yeah, just randomly, to be honest. So I really enjoy my coffee. And I think that was how many years ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, or maybe even longer. But anyway, I was just kind of starting to explore the city more and more, and I kept coming across these like amazing coffee shops, and I was like, oh, this is really cool. And you know, the designs are cool, the coffees are nice, everything was like quite a cool vibe about it. And I was like, I wonder if other people know about this or not. And that's kind of how the idea came, you know. So it was a subscription box. You you put a new coffee every month from a new roaster, sharing the details of the roaster, like all the kind of little quirks and story of it, along with like some other gifts, you know, related to coffee cups, filters, these type of things.
Amazing.
But I think more than the idea, it was a good opportunity to kind of scratch the itch of trying to do something,
right?
Which has always kind of, you know, been there. So it was really a nice experience. Ultimately, it didn't, you know, boom to a retirement type business.
All right,
But it was super fun because, like, you hear it all the time. You know, you start with step one, you get this far into the process. Next time when you start again, you know, you're already further in the process because you've seen it, you've done it, you know where to go.
Right.
So it was really nice from that perspective. And then after I left my country manager role, I spent about 2 years operating a payments white label. Pretty common business setup in the UK. But because I had a good network already, I decided that, okay, let me utilize that. And that was very much 2 years, shorts and t-shirts, just servicing clients from anywhere. Ultimately it was a really nice experience to just spend some time figuring out, okay, what do I want to do next? How do I want to do it? That allowed me to really think about what's the next step. But really fun, and there will probably be many more, to be honest. It's a really enjoyable process, and me and my wife, we spend a lot of time bouncing ideas around and, you know, thinking about what sticks. And we like that, and you know, hopefully one day in the future we could also do something together, which is another kind of aspiration. I know a lot of people find that a little bit scary, I think for us we do tend to work quite well together, so we would give it a spin.
Awesome, all the best for that.
Yeah, thank you.
And I think there's a lot of self-learning that you do, right?
Yeah.
In this entire process.
For sure, yeah.
Are there any specific people, business leaders that you get inspired by? Or is the book that you go by? Or
I think for me, what I find, I don't know if it's inspirational, but at least like very admirable, is, you know, people that showcase great things that they can do whilst not kind of ruining their personal life.
Right.
and you know, we've seen the stories, people, failed marriages, don't see their kids enough, etc. I listen to podcasts here and there, and you know, they ask the question often, you know, well, you know, if you're 90, what do you look back on your life? What would you do more? Oh, spend time with my family, kids. A lot of the same thing comes up. And I think I read a book once, like, you know, the stories from the dying or something, people who are on their deathbed and they're kind of talking about their learnings and things like that. And the same thing comes up all the time. And I'm sure you would have seen, and maybe a lot of the listeners would have seen, is there was a post not too long ago from, I don't know if he was just the CEO or the founder and CEO of Netflix. And he said, like, my most like amazing achievement is that I kept this date night every week with my wife. You know, everyone knew that on that day, if you want to do something with me, you have to do it before 5 p.m. And if it's after, you got to do it tomorrow.
Wow.
I think that's cool because a lot of the time, you know, now it's kind of like hustle, hustle, hustle till you literally, you know, can't hustle anymore.
Yeah.
Whereas, and I do this with my team, and I think that's also part of the culture within the business and why I like it, is that, you know, that positive confirmation that, you know, people have time to take time if they need or spend time with family, or even if we have a less busy week.
Yes.
Okay. It's less busy.
Yeah.
Then, you know, clock off an hour earlier.
Right.
Because I know those people still turn up when it's busy.
Right.
So I really enjoy stories where people can kind of, you know, promote that you can do amazing things and you can do stuff that's incredibly cool, but you can also balance it with actually, you know, nourishing your life, because at the end of the day, work is work, but family is life. So that's ultimately, I think, how people should see things.
Amazing.
Not get too blindsided. Yeah.
Wow. Not get too blindsided. Amazing. Yeah. That's a great tagline for your episode.
Blindsided by day.
Yeah. No, not get, how to not get blindsided. Yeah. Amazing. That's about the time that we needed from you, Deep, nice. Today. Thank you so much for doing this.
Nice to chat with you.
Such a pleasure. Thank you for taking time out. One last question. Where can our listeners and viewers follow you, and where can they follow ADN?
Yeah, I guess I'm not huge on any social media for
That's
a long
time.
That's
why you can make time for family.
But yeah, exactly. Or get too obsessed with people with, you know, amazing things. But yeah, usually I'm kind of the most vocal on places like LinkedIn and these type of engagements. So yeah, that's where people can find me.
Amazing. Thank you very much for doing this, Dee.
Yeah, pleasure.
And,
thanks for the invite.
Don't forget to follow Dee on LinkedIn. Also follow ADN. And for all your technology needs from retail to unified commerce, don't forget to follow Find. That's FYND, Find with a Y. If you want to know why it's spelled with a Y, we'll ask you why not. See you the next time. Until then, stay safe, stay happy and cheerful.